Hello and welcome to Season 14, Episode 27 of the Ubuntu Podcast. It's Tuesday the 7th of September, and in this episode we're going to be talking about the community news and some news headlines. And joining me this week, as usual, are Martin.
Hello there, how are you?
I'm quite well, a little warm, but I'm cooling myself down with a nice chilled beverage. And Alan.
Hello.
Hello, Alan. So, Martin, what have you been up to recently?
I have been buying technology from Mother Russia, comrades.
Uh-oh.
And what technology have you been buying?
The rather fantastic Octava MK012 microphones.
Wow. Are they better than those microphones that you get over here?
Apparently, yes, in every single possible way, including audio quality and price.
Well, that sounds like a winning combination.
It does, doesn't it? Yeah, so it turns out science is important in your microphone choices.
And what special science does this microphone have?
Turns out my last microphone purchase was the wrong kind of microphone entirely. So I bought shotgun microphones, which are great for outdoor use at rejecting outdoor noise, but they're terrible in untreated spaces like indoor rooms with no, you know, audio treatment.
I see.
Hello, where I'm sat now.
Did Joe tell you this after you bought it?
No, I did some research of my own and found out that these pencil small diaphragm condenser microphones are the way to go for like boomed microphone indoor use, and I'm very happy with the way it's turned out.
I see. And is that what we're hearing you on now?
It is, yes. This is the finest Russian technology, all the way from Tula, where they also make the AK-47.
Oh, well, there you go, listeners, judge for yourself.
Strange bedfellows, microphones and assault machine rifles, guns. Yes. Brilliant.
Mm. Alan, what have you been doing?
I've been playing Open Spades, which features an assault rifle. The reason I've been playing it is because April last year, I set up an Open Spades server. Actually, it's called Peak Server is the back end server, and Open Spades is one of the front ends clients. And I had it running for about 6 months. And then for some reason last year, there was some stuff going on. And I shut it down, and I forgot to take a backup before I shut it down, and I lost all the config and all the maps that I'd set up. Oh. And I couldn't face digging all that stuff out. And then recently I thought, no, I'm going to have a go. So I managed to figure out what maps they were, found them, figured out the configuration, updated the snap of Peak Server, installed it on a machine here at home, one of the spare micro servers that I haven't sold yet, and left it running for a week just to make sure it works. And it has. So I've now started it up on a server up at Linode. So it's not running on my home connection. You know, it's a bit laggy and not ideal. And I grepped the logs and I found in the space of a week of it running at home, 382 separate IP addresses connected to my OpenSpace, my Peak server, which surprised me because I thought there was only like 10 people on the planet who actually play that game.
I was going to say, isn't this a game from the distant past?
Yeah, it's about 10 years old. It's an open source re-implementation of Ace of Spades.
Right.
And I actually, after grepping the logs for the server here, I grepped the logs from the previous server that I happen to still have the logs. And there were 5,380 different IP addresses seen over a 6 month period. Now,
on the old server.
On the old server over 6 months. So there are plenty of people who use it. Now, yeah, okay, IP addresses change and that's not a good barometer of how many people play the game, but it's an order of magnitude. Yeah, it gives you an idea of the number of people on the planet who are interested in this very old game. So, yeah.
And these aren't people playing with you. This is just random people connecting to your server while it's running.
Sometimes they are playing with me and sometimes they get an opportunity to shoot me in the head or smack me with a spade.
Brilliant. What's the address?
It's just look for Popey Spades online and you'll find it.
Great. And with that, let's get on with the show. And now it's time for the community news. And there is but one community news story this week, but it's a corker. And that is the news that the Ubuntu podcast is ending. We have decided after 14 triumphant years to hang up our microphones and call it a day.
So this is not the last episode. No. There will be three more episodes after this one that you're currently listening to. And the last one goes out on the 30th of September, all being well. So you will have a few opportunities to listen to our dulcet tones through Russian microphones or otherwise over the next few weeks. And then we're going to knock it on the head, and that'll be it. We're going to end it a little bit sooner than we normally would. We'd normally end at the end of the year, but we're going to end a little bit early and not come back next year. We'll tell you that right now. We'll not be coming back next year. Normally we leave it hanging, but we'll solve that problem.
Yeah. So yeah. This is a definitive end, or at least notice of the end of the Ubuntu podcast coming on the 30th of September. So, Mark, the question that I can hear ringing in my ears from people screaming with sorrow into their podcatcher is why? Why are we doing this? Why are we ending the podcast?
Well, I mean, it's been a while, hasn't it? I mean, between us, we've been doing this for, I think you've been doing it for seven years, Martin.
Yeah, I'm the newbie and I've been doing it seven years.
Alan's been doing it for 13, 14 years and I'm somewhere in between that. And as I pointed out to Alan, that's longer than some marriages.
It's older than most of our children.
Yeah.
Yes.
We've all changed jobs in that time. We've all had big personal changes in our circumstances in that time, especially over the past 2 years. And, you know, with all of that, that's made continuing with the podcast every 2 weeks, for 10 months of the year, a bit of a challenge. Mm. So we've decided that rather than letting it wither on the vine, we're going to, go out with a bang, leave people wanting more and knock it on the head.
Now, there is one important thing that we need to mention with regards to the Patreon and the very kind PayPal payments that we've been getting that have enabled us to furnish ourselves with the services of Joe Ressington in order to edit and process our audio to make us not sound terrible, Russian microphones notwithstanding. But there is, you're not going to live it down, the fact that you bought these microphones like just as we're finishing doing this podcast. Brilliant. So there is some important news about the Patreon, isn't there, Martin?
There is. So we'll just cover this off very quickly. So we are going to leave the Patreon and the PayPal open until the first week of October to take payment for what is effectively services rendered by Joe throughout the month of September. So if you enjoy the podcast through September, please stay with Patreon, maybe tip in PayPal. We'll get that money to Joe, and then after the last podcast goes out and those payments be taken, we will shut down the PayPal and the Patreon, and you will absolutely not be charged in the future through any of those platforms. I think it's also worth pointing out that thank you to all of you that have used PayPal and Patreon over the last year. I think it's about a year ago we set this up, because I think without your support over the last year, the podcast would have probably ended sooner than now. It was basically you supporting us outsourcing the post-production of the podcast that really alleviated some of the stresses and strains that we were seeing, and have kept the podcast going for as long as it has. So thank you very much for everyone that supported the podcast over the last 13 months. We're very much appreciative of that, and we're sorry that, we're not going to be taking $2 a month or whatever it is out of your wallet from this point forward.
And we're also thinking, if the podcast ends on September 30th, we thought we'd have a bit of an after party for those of you who've been listening, whether you've been listening only for a short period, only this season, or if you've been listening since the beginning or anywhere in between. We're thinking of having some kind of virtual online get together. We don't know the details yet, but it will probably be on the Friday after the 30th of September. The 1st of October.
The first.
have to do that every time. How did I get to be nearly 50 and not know how many days there are in any of the months of the year?
Well, you know, it is our, you know, diminishing, you know, mental capacity that's part of the problem here, isn't it?
Speak for yourself. And so we'll give more details of that get together or whatever it might be. We haven't decided on a technology or platform or anything like that. So we'll let you know more about that in a subsequent episode, because remember, there are three more episodes after this one. This isn't the last one.
Yeah. And for those of you that are connected with us through either Telegram or Twitter or whatever,
we're going to block you.
Well, we'll do that on October the 2nd, of course. But until then, let us know, does Friday the 1st of October work for you? Approximately 8 p.m. UK time in the evening, which is 3 p.m. Eastern in America. That's when we're planning to do this. Let us know what you think about that.
Yeah. And, you know, we're not going away. We're still around as individuals. We're still online. Martin, you're doing your live streams, so people can still catch you there if they want to see you live streaming on Twitch.
Yes, if you're going to be satisfied with 33% of the Ubuntu podcast, then yes, you can find me on Twitch.
I'd say it's nearer 50%, but okay. And I will be available for people to shoot me in the head in a video game, not in real life.
Yeah.
Open Spades, and might also live stream some of that as well. That might be quite fun.
Yes, and we're not getting rid of the Telegram channel either. You can still catch us over at ubuntupodcast.org/telegram, the nicest place on the internet.
Yeah, and similar to the Telegram group, which we're going to leave up for posterity and for you to continue to chat, because we've got a nice little group of, you know, community members there who we enjoy, you know, chatting about everything. It's not just Ubuntu in there. We're going to try and keep the website up for as long as is feasibly possible as sort of a record of what we put out. And if one day the website should go down, we do have a complete back catalogue of all of the episodes on YouTube, which will obviously be there for as long as YouTube is a thing.
Yeah, we haven't thought about, you know, archiving it all on archive.org, but it's all CC licensed, so, you know, we could do that fairly easily.
So, are we on a break, or is this it?
Well, from my point of view, this is it.
Yeah.
It's really ending on 30th of September. It's not just taking a break. It's, I think, like you said at the beginning, Mark, the changes to our lives, and, you know, we found this is a good time to stop and move on to and focus our time on other activities in our lives for all three of us, really.
Yeah. So the three of us had a conversation about this a couple of weeks ago, but we've been there might be speculation that this has been drawn to a close due to recent events in the Ubuntu community. We've been debating this between the three of us since early July, I think, is when we first started sort of, you know, putting the idea around that maybe this might be our last season. And after we had a think about it, we decided it is time to draw things to a close, and we're not going to drag things out to the end of the year under some kind of, you know, false expectation of, you know, conclusion. We're just going to end neatly when it suits us.
And on that note, let's end that section neatly where it suits us right now, and get on with the news. And now it's time for some news from the wider tech world. Martin, you're first this time.
I am delighted to tell you that babies can now learn computer engineering from a book.
Perfect.
Excellent.
Where can I buy one?
Well, it turns out, Kickstarter. So we had quite the pickings of news this week, and this was by far the most uplifting story that I saw. So there's a computer engineer who's designed a board book for babies to keep them engaged while they learn about the stuff that computers are made from.
The thing I think that explains this best is the video. I think it's worth clicking the link in the show notes again, because no matter how much we describe, it's a book that keeps babies entertained, and it's got XOR and gate logic gates in it. People will think, what? No, those two things don't sound like they go together. But it's really well designed. I love the look of it, and the video shows babies clearly engaging with the book.
Yeah, I mean, anyone that has had children knows that, you know, babies are fascinated by touching things and seeing an immediate reaction from touching or manipulating something. So this is 6 pages. Each page has the same 2 buttons, but depending on whether it's not or and or whatever it might be, changes the way the illuminations work or don't work, or the color that they shine. So this has been 5 years in the making. It was designed by somebody who had seen their own baby fascinated by flipping light switches on and off and the effect of flipping a switch and something illuminating. It's over on Kickstarter. And they've blown through their initial goal. I think they were looking for $7,500 and already it's up at close to $50,000. So this is clearly on its way to success.
It's quite cute. You know, if you're picturing it in your mind's eye, there's 2 like arcade switch buttons, like micro switch buttons in the book. So when you, as you open the first page, there's 1 button. And as you open the second page, you reveal the second button. And as you press the buttons, you can hear them clicking, which is obviously an attractive thing for a baby. But also there's a picture of the gate that it's educating you on. And then on the right-hand side of the page is the LED. So as you press the button or latch the buttons or press them together, different things happen on each page. Now, obviously, a child is not necessarily going to pick up, oh, that's an OR gate, that's an AND gate, immediately. But I think it wouldn't take much to figure out after a while of going through the book a few times that the first time you go through it, oh, I need to press this one on its own. And then on this one, I have to press them both. And on that one, either of them works. And on this one, it latches. And it's quite sweet, I think.
I think it does teach those concepts in much the same way that the Hungry Caterpillar books teach, you know, apple, tomato, red, green, and, you know, some simple, you know, words and colours and things like that. I think, you know, it does convey meaning in a simple way.
As to how useful this will be and whether they will turn into microprocessor engineers, we just don't know. We'll have to come back to this.
I'll let you know in 15 years.
Have you backed it then, Mark?
I think I might. I haven't done yet, but it does look quite cool.
And I think, you know, as educational as it may or may not turn out to be, it is just good fun. And, you know, for anyone that's got an interest in computing, this is a fun thing to give to the baby or small toddler in your life.
Or adult.
Well, okay, Alan, I'll put that on your birthday wish list.
Thanks.
Alan, what's next?
Twitter has figured out a business model.
I don't believe you.
Steady on. So the plan is that people with more than a certain number of followers can now have people who pay them in order to see their content. So much in the same way as platforms like YouTube and Twitch and OnlyFans and TikTok and all the others allow the consumer to send rewards to the content creator. Twitter has never really had that. Everything's been free. I mean, it's either a public or a private account. There's no way for you to make money off that other than like advertising. And now what they've done is they've added a model whereby people can subscribe to your Twitter account. And at the point at which you post tweets, you can choose whether it's a public tweet that anyone can see for free or whether it's a tweet that only your subscribers can see. And therefore, you're rewarding those people who've paid to subscribe to your channel, if you like.
I am not a business mogul, but this sounds like a rubbish business model.
I don't know. I think it has legs.
Really?
There are content creators on Twitter, such as comic creators.
Oh,
there's
okay.
a whole slew of people I follow on Twitter who create webcomics. And they get no reward for me viewing their comic on Twitter. But what if I, you know, I've for a couple of them, I've sent them money via PayPal or Ko-fi or whatever it's called. And, you know, in order to reward them for the amusing comics that they make for me, what if I could subscribe, much like Patreon you know, it's a way to reward a content creator. Right. That's all it is. It's no different than any other. It's just the difference is that Twitter has been free for everyone from the start, and now they're introducing this paid tier a bit late in the game.
So it is a subscription to exclusive content of your favorite tweeters.
Yes, exactly. Just like Patreon allows people to have, you know, exclusive content, and the same goes for OnlyFans and all the other, you know, systems that have paid models. It's a bit restricted at the moment. There's a waiting list, and you have to be in the USA. You've got to be over 18, have over 10,000 followers, and you've actually got to have tweeted a certain number of times. I think it's 25 times in the last 30 days in order to qualify to turn this option on. And even then, you're joining a waiting list to get the option switched on.
Do you have to be verified?
No.
Interesting.
It doesn't have to be a verified account. And there are three tiers, $2.99, $4.99, and $9.99 US dollars. And then from that point onwards, people can subscribe at that tier. But you have to get through the criteria and get through the waiting list first.
Okay, so you don't, as the creator, you don't get to choose the tiers. Those are the three tiers that are available to you. You don't get to choose your pricing.
Yes, it's $2.99, right. $4.99, or $9.99.
So you choose one of those. You don't get people subscribing at three tiers and then make stuff available depending on how much they pay.
I think so. As far as I can see in the user interface, there's only two options. It's a public tweet or it's one that goes to your subscribers and your subscribers pay one of those fees. I think it's interesting that they're trying it. I'm not sure how successful it will be.
Yeah. I mean, like Martin, I'm not really a business person. I'm not an investor in Twitter. But as a concept, I think this is a pretty good idea in general. I think, you know, I could see myself with certain people on Twitter. I could see myself subscribing to them if they continued to amuse me in their subscriber only content.
Yeah.
I think it's a nice way of giving people a way to make money. Like, there are people who post on Twitter about their other platform where they're trying to get you to go over there so you can give them money. So this is just an easier way of content creators being able to say, well, you know, you're already here, just pay me on here and I'll just keep posting here.
And people could, like, if you're a creator and you've got a paid account, you could potentially, like people do on Patreon, have, like, exclusive stuff for people who are paying, and then a week later or a month later, you know, retweet that out again, but to everyone, and then everyone gets to see it.
Yeah, like you say, though, it's, you know, similar to Patreon, you know, and Twitch and YouTube to some extent. Does this not promote like double dipping? Like, do you back their Twitter or their YouTube membership or their Twitch subscribers or their Patreon? Or do you end up doing all four of those things?
It depends what content they're making exclusive on each platform and whether you want all of it.
Right. Yeah, I guess so.
I don't think they overlap necessarily. Okay. I think there's a distinct difference between the content you would get on Twitter, given the constricted nature of it, compared to what you know, a full length 10 minute or 1 hour video you'd get on YouTube, or, you know, a live performance on OnlyFans or TikTok or Twitch. I think they're it's different types of people. And there are plenty of people who only go to one of those platforms and don't follow you on any of the others.
That's fair. Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, with the changes that are happening at OnlyFans and the fact that there are, you know, women who are using social media to, you know, make a living, it could be that member exclusive content on Twitter could be their new home after, you know, the changes in OnlyFans policy.
Yeah, I don't know if it allows grown up content, shall we say. Anyway, we shall keep an eye on that and come. Oh, maybe not.
And on that bombshell, Google has announced new photo upscaling tech. So now you can enhance that image just like on CSI. This takes like pixelated images of faces, which are impossible to discern who it is, and gives you a high resolution face so that you can catch the bad guy. Although not really. The way this works is they've taken high resolution faces and they've progressively added noise to them until they're just noise. And then they've trained the algorithm to reverse that process. So if they give it a pixelated face, it can then sort of work backwards and denoisify it and give you a high resolution face. Now, what they don't show in the demo is the original face that they then pixelated. So it's not completely clear if it's, you know, giving you a face that looks like the original, or what I suspect is it's just generating a plausible face from the pixelated data that you're giving it.
I've got opinions about this. The first thing I will say is this, is that while it could be they're showing you the before picture that they blurred and they then used as a training model, and then they showed you, you know, a blurred thing and the original rather than what the AI made up. I have seen, you know, sometimes you see people doing videos online and they'll blur out their password or their credit card number and all the rest of it. I know that there are algorithms out there that can de-blur and restore some of those, you know, smudging effects that exist. So given that this process is similar, but for a face, I could believe that what they've shown is the after versus, you know, the some sort of, you know, contrived example.
Yes. But yeah, I think the real question is how much does the after look like the original high resolution picture?
Right.
Well, I can tell you, not very much, because I tested it. I used my own face and I used one of my avatars and I shrank it down to something like 100 by 100 pixels, something pretty small.
Yeah.
And I fed it to the algorithm and I got a completely different person out the other end.
I assumed that was a joke.
Nope. That was actually it.
I assumed you just got a face.
I mean, it gave me a face and it was the face of middle-aged white man, but it weren't my face. It was somebody else's face.
That kind of reassures me a bit, because one of the, like, there was a grid of faces which they've sort of published of, you know, these are some of the faces we've de-blurred from this image. And it included some pictures of kids. And, you know, sometimes parents will post a picture which has their kids in, which isn't that they're not the subject of the photo. So they blur their faces out. And it kind of, it seems like this is one of those, just because we can do it, does that mean we should? You know, people might blur their faces or other people's faces in photos for a reason and not really want you to be able to de-blur them. So the fact that it de-blurs them to a new AI-generated face is kind of reassuring.
Right. So it is a best guess, best efforts reconstruction.
I can't imagine any AI would be able to recreate this gorgeous Adonis.
Well, there is that website. Is it called This Person Does Not Exist?
Oh, yeah,
is that
exactly.
The URL? Yeah, which yeah. is a similar thing. It takes sort of, it's a bit like that cardboard game we used to have as kids where you could like take the forehead and the hair and the eyes and the nose and the mouth and the chin and you could make these, you know,
like
different faces.
Like a police photo fit, you mean?
Right, yeah, it is. It's police photo fit, but it's AI and it generates from this composite of different facial features a distinctive human-looking photograph.
Hmm.
The thing I find a little bit disturbing is almost exclusively, everything that talks about AI and ML is about recognizing faces, generating faces, creating realistic fakes of faces. It's all to do with, you know, basically faking the human face and expressions. And I haven't figured out why everyone is so fascinated about that particular application of AI rather than teaching computers how to create a better vaccination for COVID or a better treatment for cancer or whatever it might be.
Why not both?
Well, it could be both. We just hear about faces.
Yes, because you don't read medical journals, you read the tech news.
Yes. Well, if there's anyone out there that is in the medical industry and they can cite examples of AI ML being used for actual social good, I'd love to hear about it.
That's your bombshell. Next year, science podcast. Three clueless idiots talk about science.
And that's all the news this week. And that's all for episode 27. Thank you very much for listening, everybody. And we will speak to you again next time.